From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds. Congressman Jay Inslee is the Democrat, and he's in a tight race for governor with Republican Attorney General Rob McKenna. I spoke to Rob McKenna in late September, and today Jay Inslee joins me. Thank you so much for being here.
It's a great day. Great day to have some ballots out there.
There are ballots
there
out
are.
There waiting to be voted on right now. So if,
right.
If your pen is poised over the governor's race, hang on a second and hear what this guy Jay Inslee has to
I
say.
I appreciate that.
You've been an attorney. You farmed alfalfa. You've represented two congressional districts in Washington State. You co-wrote a book called Apollo's Fire, Igniting America's Clean Energy Economy. But people may not know that you're not just a congressman in real life. You played Senator Lucas in the 2005 film The Deal. Here's your big scene with Christian Slater.
What you have done, Tom, is to allow us to continue to fight a war we must win, that we will win. In my book, in America's book, that makes you a true patriot.
Jay Inslee, if this politics thing doesn't work out, you're going to make another try at Hollywood?
I can give you one pledge. I am 100 times a better public official than I am an actor. I will tell you that for sure. And we don't think we'll be going that way. But I have to tell you, I am a movie buff, and we hope we have a happy ending for the state to keep our state moving forward in this governor's race. And so I'm very excited about this race.
Well, it's going to be over quite soon. Chris Gregoire was just today telling our Olympia correspondent, Austin Jenkins, that she's going to take another look at funding for public schools that could include revenue enhancements. Here's what she told Austin.
For months, Gregoire has been saying the state will have to come up with a new revenue source for schools. This after the Supreme Court ruled Washington is not adequately funding education. But now, for the first time, Gregoire confirms she will propose a new funding source as one of her last acts as governor.
I will. I think that's my duty. It's on my watch, and what the next governor and legislature does with it, I leave to them. But I think it's my responsibility with as much as I know. And as hard as I've worked over the last 3 years to look at every conceivable source of money.
Gregoire says all tax options are on the table. That would include a state capital gains tax. She says the key is the new revenue source needs to grow because Washington will have to pump an additional nearly $7 billion into public schools through 2019. Gregoire says any tax increase would likely have to meet voter approval. I'm Austin Jenkins in Olympia.
Jay Inslee, what's your reaction to Chris Gregoire's proposal?
Well, I tell you, this is the paramount duty of the state, and it is the duty of all of us to fulfill that, not just because of the McCleary decision, because it's our social and parental and, for me, grandparental responsibility.
And that's the Supreme Court decision that the state's not fulfilling its paramount duty under the Constitution.
We shouldn't have to wait for a Supreme Court decision to make sure that our schools are adequately funded. Now, here's what I'm proposing. I believe that if—
I want to get to what you're proposing, but I'd like to get your response to what the governor just said she's proposing a new revenue source for education. Do you think that there needs to be a new revenue source, some kind of tax?
Well, I do not believe that, and I'm not proposing that. But I am proposing that we pump very significant dollars into education, and I have a specific plan on how to do that. And I'll just let me tell you, if I can, a little bit about that. Here's the facts about our state budget, and anyone who looks at this has to reach this conclusion. If you're going to be a great educational governor, you have to be a great governor on creation of jobs, number one, and you have to be a great creator of healthcare innovation and healthcare reform. And here's the reason. The reasons we have had hemorrhaging of dollars out of our educational funding has been principally two reasons. Number one, we have the Great Recession precipitated by the Wall Street irresponsibility that I voted against, by the way. I voted against the deregulation of Wall Street. And as a result of that, we have 300,000 people out of work. And as a result of that, state tax revenues are $4.2 billion less than they would have been but for this Wall Street precipitated recession. So we have to get these people back to work if, in fact, no matter who is governor, to, in fact, generate revenues to put into education. And we need to be looking for a governor with both the experience to create jobs and the vision to create jobs. And I've got both, and I hope we can talk about that. Now, the second thing we need to do is realize where the money is going. We've got a $31 billion budget. We have about $14 billion to education. But the next big place is healthcare, and that's about $7.2 billion. And what is happening is we've been hemorrhaging money out of the educational budget going into the healthcare budget. And we need to have a governor with both the ideas and the experience to find new ways to embrace healthcare reform so that we can reduce the inflation rate of healthcare. And I intend to do that and have a very specific plan to do that so we can take that money put it back into education.
Here's the bare outline of what you've just been saying. You're talking about trying to balance the budget because if you are, become the governor, as you know, you'll be walking into office with like between a $400 million and perhaps more deficit in the current budget as it exists. You're talking about boosting funding to education, and you just said no new taxes. How do all those things come together?
Well, it comes together, and by the way, these are not the only two things I propose. But again, look at where the source of this problem is. If we had continued on the pace of economic growth absent the recession, we would have $4.2 billion available today through education. It gives you the scope of what is possible if, in fact, we have a governor who's been focused, as I have, like a laser beam on job creation for the last several years. And I've got the experience and a plan to do that. Second, we've got healthcare innovation. Now, let me give you a scope of what's possible here. If we are successful with our healthcare reform plans on achieving the same level of reduction of healthcare inflation as King County has, for instance, they've saved about $46 million the last couple of years by embracing some fairly benign first steps in preventative healthcare. If you extrapolate to the state government, it's several hundred million dollars of savings we can take out of the healthcare budget, put into the educational budget. Third thing we need to do is this. We need to make sure that the systems of quality and performance improvement that have been so successful at Boeing and Virginia Mason Hospital and Genie Industries are in fact embedded in the culture of Olympia. These are generally called the lean management principles. We started down that road. We have to have a governor who is committed to embrace that throughout the culture. And fourth, we do need to look at some revenues directly from closing some of these corporate loopholes that have been allowed to exist because some lobbyists got the loophole and it stayed for decades. And we need to review those on a regular basis and close the ones that are not creating jobs. Now, those are a four-step process to be able to fulfill our obligation to schools.
And I want to unpack those four steps as we go along. But in reducing health care costs, there are those who say that state employees like me should be paying more than 15% of the cost. They say the average in private business is 25%. They say what the next governor has to do is to figure out a way to get state employees to pay more of their own health care. Do you agree?
I think we ought to be focused on reducing the size of the pie rather than just arguing about who pays the slices. And what we should have optimism about is our ability to reduce the overall cost of the provision of health care in our state if we adopt health care reform. Let me give you an example. If, in fact, we effectuate the Affordable Care Act that we helped pass under President Obama's leadership, if, in fact, we effectuate that in the state of Washington, we will have direct savings of $120 million, and this is confirmed by the Urban Institute. It's just one of the places we can have savings. And the reason is right now we have people on what's called the Disability Lifeline. We pay about 50% of that as state taxpayers. That will be converted to 100% payment by the federal government simply by effectuating healthcare. We've got the ability now to take what I call the $1,000 hidden tax, which is now on all of us who have insurance. We're all paying about $1,000 per family to pay for the uncompensated care of the 300,000 people who don't have insurance, who go to the emergency room, who run up $300,000 bills, and the insurance company then bills us. We can replace that with federal dollars so that we can lift that cost on us. Now, as far as state employees and teachers and folks on Medicaid, we ought to have confidence that we can save hundreds of millions of dollars on this. And I'll tell you why. If you look at what was going around in our state, if we implement the positive changes that I have been working on for several years, take a look at Wenatchee Valley Clinic. They have focused on preventative health care by making sure that they keep people managing their diabetes appropriately so they don't end up with an amputation that costs hundreds of thousands of dollars. They have made small investments in preventative care, and they have decreased their net cost by 18%, almost one-fifth. Look at King County that they've reduced their inflation rate by about 4 to 6%, and they want to get down to a 4% figure. We have not done this in our state government. To do this, we need someone who is really committed to health care reform, and I'm the only candidate in this race who, in fact, wants to move forward with health care reform.
Well, in fact, Rahm McKenna, as Attorney General, tried to overturn the Affordable Care Act. A couple of things your opponent says that he would do to save state money, and I want to get your reaction to them. One of the things he says the state needs to do is to open up the state system of workers' comp to competition from private insurance companies. Then he also says the idea of privatizing things like data services, printing, and facilities maintenance would also save money. Do you agree with him on those points?
Not principally. Certainly not on the one where he wants to give millions of dollars of our taxpayer monies to his friends in the insurance industry by privatizing the labor and industry process. We have voted on that. Washington voters have voted. Every single county rejected this idea when it was on the ballot. And the reason is that taxpayers want to make sure that their dollars go to provide, you know, for workers' families, not to the profits of the insurance companies. This is soundly rejected by the people of the state of Washington. It really does not provide any particular avenue. And frankly, some of our costs are relatively low relative to the rest of the country today. Now, there are some things we can do to streamline procurement systems for our state. Let me give you an example. At the University of Washington, I want to work with them to reduce some of the regulations that do increase some of their procurement costs for goods and services. That doesn't necessarily involve privatization. It involves reducing some of the regulatory burden on them so they can get more bang for the buck. And this is where this lean management that I talked about comes in, that we can use on college's campuses as well as through our state agencies. So, yes, we do need to find a way to do more with less. But the ways to do it are to continue to respect taking care of our citizens.
Excuse my skepticism, but I hear things like lean management. It sounds very buzzwordy. What does that actually mean, lean management? And how do we know that it'll work in state government?
The reason we know it'll work is twofold. One, we are surrounded by examples of incredible improvement in performance in the private sector. Boeing has used these systems to increase their productivity by 33%. They turn out one-third more 737s than before their implementation of these changes down in Renton.
But they're making 737s. That's right. Different than what state government does, right?
I'll get to my second point. Okay. There are some differences, but there are a lot of similarities. They all involve a process. They all involve empowering employees to find ways to root out waste in a process. And when various governments have done that, they have had good success with this as well. King County saved $400,000 on overtime for their sheriffs, for instance, last year by embracing some of these lean management principles. It's applicable in healthcare. You go to the legacy Salmon Creek Hospital in Vancouver that just started embracing these changes. I was in the ICU 3 weeks ago. Not as a patient, thankfully.
Yes.
And they saved about 60% of their overtime by empowering their employees to redesign the system of how they provide care in that hospital. So these are very significant savings if, in fact, we will implement them.
It all makes sense. But are you saying Governor Gregoire has not already implemented these kind of savings, these kind of lean management strategies?
Our state has dipped our toe in the water. In fact, today there's a meeting about this today and trying to continue this. But this is a very small percentage of our state employees have been trained in this. A very small percentage of our agencies are using it. So we've just got the start. We've got a long ways to go. And people should understand, by the way, this is no panacea. It takes years. This is the word constant quality means constant. But we have to have a governor who is committed to those changes, and I will be that governor.
You've talked about eliminating some tax preferences as a way to make government leaner, but you've also spoken about giving some tax breaks, $8 million in tax credits for small companies that add employees. How do you know that that tax credit creates a job versus it was a job that was going to be created anyway, and then the employer just pockets the tax credit?
Well, I'll give you an example of the kind of thing I think we need. As you know, I'm a fifth-generation son of the state of Washington. I fundamentally believe that we are one of the most innovative peoples in the world. We are the most entrepreneurial. We have some of the most tremendous new inventions that we're creating and discovering at the UW and WSU. What we're not doing is allowing small startup companies what they need to get going. And we know that's where most of the job creation is going to be created. I'll give you an example. So I've been working amongst some of my work with the biotechnology industry. I was biotechnology legislator of the year a couple years ago because I've been working with the industry to help small businesses thrive. And what we found is we've got some great research going on at the UW, and we'd like to help some small businesses thrive, but they have, you know, desperate needs to have capital, particularly when they're very small. So what I have proposed is a tradable research and development tax credit that a small business that is very intensively undercapitalized in research and development to be able to sell that to a more mature company and generate some capital to do that. Now, interestingly enough, this is an idea that is working under the leadership of Chris Christie, Governor Chris Christie, mm-hmm. Republican in New Jersey, that is showing great promise in this regard. These are small, very highly targeted.
If these are such good ideas, why can't they get the capital they need from private equity?
Well, I think we have to recognize that innovation is tough to start with, and we are in a competitive environment. I don't think we can ignore the fact that we are in an international competition for these jobs. Take the solar industry or the clean tech industry today. We know there are going to be very extensive developments in clean tech. We know that there are going to be thousands of jobs created. The question is, are they going to be created in China or Germany or the state of Washington? And I opt for the state of Washington. So today, some of the things what we're seeing are very successful. I was at the iTech solar panel manufacturing firm, Bellingham. It's our newest firm. They have reduced the cost of installed solar by about 40% in the last few years. Silicon Energy in Marysville, they build the most durable solar panel in the world today. And they're able to do that because we have a very small subsidy that helps their customers get a subsidy when they buy panels made in the state of Washington. We are at the very beginning of an industrial revolution. And I think if you've looked at many of the industrial revolutions, they've had some component to help these new industries thrive.
Absolutely. There's certainly a history of where support has yielded big results, but there's also a history of where support has just gone down a rat hole. I mean, Solyndra, the company in California that got huge federal subsidies, ended up going bankrupt after getting those subsidies. And it boils down to the critique of your approach, which is government's no good at picking winners or losers when it comes to business. It's not government's area of expertise.
Well,
how do you respond to that?
You bet. First off, you'd be surprised to know that people make assertions about my plan that are frankly false, and that's the situation in this one. We are not proposing loan guarantees of the nature that you talked about in Solyndra. We are not proposing large cash infusions or expenditures by the state government. What we are proposing to do is to make some very targeted things to help new innovation thrive. Let me give an example. So here at the University of Washington, we're doing some tremendous, and I'll be there tonight, by the way, with some folks on campus. But we're doing some tremendous research, and it can really bear fruit. For instance, there's a company in the shores of Lake Union, Energy 2. They're one of the world's leaders in nanotechnology. That you can marry that to a lithium-ion battery and really increase its performance. And they spun off from the physics department here at the UW. But we are not doing that nearly as fast. So we want to free the University of Washington to enter into equity partnerships with small businesses so we can build these companies. And if we do this half as fast as the University of Utah, we'll create billions of dollars of new economic opportunity for our state. That's a good thing. It's a common sense thing, and it ought to be bipartisan.
You're listening to Democratic candidate for governor Jay Inslee. We're going to take a short break in a moment. The polls kind of show this to be neck and neck. Do you think that's accurate?
Yeah, I've always thought this was going to be a competitive race, and that's good because I'm a competitor. And if we have to win in the last second like we did in 69 at Heck Edmondson in the state championship, that's fine with me.
This is The Conversation, and my guest today is the Democratic gubernatorial candidate, Jay Inslee. The latest polls show it's very, very close. Ballots are in your hands. They have to be in by a week from next Tuesday. Jay Inslee, your opponent has danced Gangnam Style. Will you?
Listen, there are some things I won't do for a vote, and that's one of them. So sing or dance. So I'm going to have to just win it on my jobs creation program and on my effort to keep the state moving forward on health care and the environment. If that doesn't do it, so be it. But I feel good about where we're heading in the race.
I want to get to education. We talked about that a little bit before. The state Supreme Court has, as we mentioned, found the state's not fulfilling its paramount duty to fund basic education. Rob McKenna told us his approach when he was here in September.
My point is that non-education spending as a whole should be limited to 6% of biennium so that we can free up the money to invest in our public schools and our higher education system. That means some parts of the non-education budget could grow faster than 6% and other parts could grow more slowly than 6%.
So he's got a formula. Just take the non-education part of the budget, restrict it from going up more than 6%, and he thinks that's going to take care of it. What do you think of that?
Well, it's true. We need to reduce, as a percentage, the non-educational spending and increase the educational spending. There's no question about that. But the question is, who's got the experience and the vision, who's able to do that? And I'm the only candidate in this race who is embracing health care reform, which is the fundamental way to do that. Let me tell you why. There are really only three parts of the state government are growing over 6% right now. One's debt service, can't do anything about that. The other is financial aid. Obviously, we want to increase financial aid. But the third and the big one and the place where there is money is in the healthcare budget. And so here is where I come down to this central point. If you're going to be an educational governor, you have to be a healthcare reform governor because that is the place that we can actually generate savings, move money out of the non-educational budget into the educational budget. Now, here's why this is so important. We now face a choice in this state whether we're going to move forward or go backwards on health care. We have an opportunity to move forward to make sure that women have access to preventative health care, to mammography screenings without costs. I'm the only candidate who supports that. The opponent actually tried to eliminate that right. We've got the right to move forward to make sure women and men, for that reason, have the ability for family planning services and access to contraceptives. I am the only candidate who's been fully supportive of that. My opponent tried to eliminate that. We now have tools, some of which I talked about, which can reduce health care by focusing on preventative care. This is the tools we need to bring to bear to reduce those costs and put it into education.
I want to get focused specifically on education. Agree with it or not, Rob McKenna has this 6% formula that he says. Superintendent of Public Instruction Randy Dorn says we need a 39% hike in basic education funding. Like it or not, those are kind of some specific goals to get us where they think we need to be to fulfill our mandate. A basic mandate in the Constitution, the paramount responsibility in the Constitution for basic education. Where do we need to get to? Can you be specific?
You bet. And let me start with things that may not be just financial. I think it's very important in this discussion that we not use a fact that we are short on dollars to say we should remain short on reform. And I want to mention some of the things on reform that we need to have on a very specific basis. Number one, we've got to continue to have more objective evaluation system of our teachers so that we can assure that we've got an excellent teacher in every classroom. Number two, we have to make sure that those evaluations, in fact, are used in personnel decisions, not just seniority. Number three, we have to have much better mentoring program, and I'm the only candidate in the race who has proposed a specific plan to give teachers better mentoring to assure that they're ready to go. You know, we throw these young teachers into the classroom to sink or swim and really don't have a mentoring program. I'm the only candidate who's really proposing that. Number four, we have to have an Innovation Schools grant program to inspire and enable schools to embrace new types of education that I'm very excited about, the Taft Academy in STEM,
sure.
Delta and Tri-Cities, Lincoln Center. We've got to make sure that those kind of seeds grow. So I think it's really important to note that my specific education plans include very significant things with reform, which should not wait for additional funds. Now, in additional funds, we've talked about this for the last 20 minutes now about how to do this. And to do this, let me suggest this.
I'm asking you what it's going to take. How much money is it going to take?
It's going to take about $1.7. It's going to take about $1.7 billion in the short term, and we have a plan to make sure, mm-hmm. on a very specific basis, that that is fulfilled. But the single most important point in doing that is to have a governor with the experience to create jobs, so we can get people to work, so that they can start paying sales taxes, so we can make up that $4.2 billion hole in the budget. Now, I want to talk about this, if I can, just for a moment, because I think this is an important distinction in the candidates. To do that, to fill that educational gap, we've got to have a governor with both the experience and the vision to create jobs. Now, there is a big difference in the experience of the two candidates in this regard. For the last decade, I have been focusing intensely on policies that will help job creation in our state. I am the candidate who has a proposal to make sure that we protect intellectual property so that we can grow the biotechnology industry here and put people back to work. I'm the candidate who's been working with the agricultural industry to see to it that we can grow agriculture. I was very successful in getting water for farmers and fighting to get our apples into Japan.
How many jobs have these policies created?
Thousands. I don't have down to the tens, but thousands. I'll give you an example. We've had a huge expansion of our wine industry in eastern Washington, in part because we have been able to provide additional irrigation supplies in the bill that I passed as a member of Congress. You look at our clean energy sector today, and as you know, I've been a leader on this. Start in Spokane, people at McKinstry. In Spokane, Washington, largest provider of energy efficiency in the Western Hemisphere. You drive west on I-90, you get to Moses Lake, to the REC company, largest manufacturer of silicon substrate in the Western Hemisphere. You turn right on I-5, you go north to Marysville, where we're making the world's most durable solar panels. You turn around, you go south to Tacoma. And in Tacoma, if you go to Tacoma today, there's a 130-foot crane at the Martinique Shipbuilding Company, and it says Inslee for jobs on the top of it, 150-foot long banner. And the reason it's there is that this is a company that has the potential to build the first hybrid lithium-ion battery tugs for the United States Navy, first ones in the Western Hemisphere. So I have had the experience working with these entrepreneurs. I've been endorsed by multiple CEOs of our biotechnology companies. When Microsoft needed to create jobs and needed to have additional spectrum, they came to me, and I made that happen so that we can create jobs in the cloud and in software. So I think that experience is going to suit me very well, creating jobs and then funding education.
I want to get back to education because one of your four points was the idea of innovation schools. And I gather that's your response to those who say there already are innovation schools out there. They're called charter schools, and let's try them. That's going to be on the ballot with you. You reject that notion?
Yeah, I think, I welcome anybody with an idea to try to bring innovation to schools. But
charter schools?
I won't be supportive of this initiative because it drains off several thousand dollars from a school every time a pupil leaves an existing 2,389 schools and goes to a charter school with no proposal on how to replace that money. But what we do need is innovation in our schools, and that is why I have proposed a very specific plan to help innovators, teachers, principals, and community members to bring new types of education. And what I am finding, and I think people need to get around and seeing this, we have tremendous innovation going on in our schools. We've got a new STEM Academy in the Seattle Public Schools in West Seattle. We have the TAF Academy at Federal Way, where my favorite, philosophical sign is, they've got in their science lab, it looks like a speed limit sign. It says, excuses limit zero. Mm-hmm. And that's the philosophy we need to know. Over in Toppenish, the number one principal in America today is Trevor Green. He's increased his graduation rate using new innovative techniques to 90%. These are existing public schools. We need to empower people in the public system to increase that innovation. I'm very optimistic about that.
If elected, Jay Inslee, will you have the power and the means at your disposal to accomplish these changes you would like to? As you're aware, Governor Gregoire at one time proposed creating, I think it was an education commissioner, appointed by the governor to kind of coordinate all the policies, K-12, community colleges, universities. Of course, Randy Dorn, who's publicly elected to do part of that, did not like that idea. Do you think that we have, you would, as governor, have sufficient powers to make these changes in education?
Well, I think you do have some power as governor, but we don't believe in czars in our state, and I won't be proposing, that the governor becomes czar. We're going to work on a broad basis to try to build a consensus around these approaches. I doubt we're going to see wholesale changes in that regard. I think the authority of the governor is to raise our aspirations. Let me mention an aspiration I want to raise. Today, we have over 20% of our students not graduate from high school. More than one out of five of those beautiful first graders aren't going to graduate from high school, and as much as 35% some of our minority populations. I don't believe that we should settle for that, and I know we can have a better aspiration. Bridgeport High School, small school over northeast in Wenatchee, they had a 52% dropout rate several years ago, but they decided as a community to create an expectation that kids graduate from high school. This year, they embraced an internship program with the business community. They had a program to get students on a college campuses. They helped students on one of my reform proposals get more classes they can take in college for college credit in high school. It's very effective. And last year, they had 100% of their students graduate from high school. I want to create an aspiration for every child in that regard, and not just those going to four-year colleges as well. I think a very important part of our educational plan has to make sure that we give every child a post-K through 12 vision. That might be as being a machinist. That might be as an electrician. And we need to make sure those students have experience and training. That's why I want to expand the skill centers to make sure they're engaged in school.
People paying attention to this governor's race have heard a lot about the levy swap. And under it, the state property tax levy for schools will be increased while reducing local school levies by the same amount. It's designed, they say, to be revenue neutral. Some wealthy districts would see their taxes go up. Less well-to-do districts would see their taxes go down. You were adamantly opposed to this. Why are you opposed to it?
Well, look, the goal has to be to increase finances for schools.
Overall.
We have to get more dollars into the school. Anything that falls short of that simply does not cut the mustard. Now, I know two things about this proposal. And if you'll look at Republican Joe Zarelli's proposal in this regard, it is very specific that two things would happen in this proposal. Number one, just about half of the folks in about half of the school districts in the state of Washington would see their property taxes go up, and not an insignificant number, sometimes as much as about 20% in certain school districts, number one. And number two, and this is amazing, it will not generate one net new dollar for a single school in the state of Washington.
But will it even out the differences between the school
districts? No, it will not, because it will not provide, as I said, it will not provide one single new dollar for one single new school in the state of Washington. And that has to be our goal. This may provide some, you know, help for Olympia politicians on paper. It does not provide help for kids in school. And I think the concern is if people papered this over and thought we'd done our job if we did this, it doesn't actually get to the net result, which is to increase resources for schools. And to me, that is a passion. It is the way I got into public service. Trudy and I, you know, we were living over in Sela, raising our kids and raising hay in Sela. And we'd had a school bond fail seven times and passed it on the eighth try. This is something I've been working on for a long time, and I will be committed as governor to make sure we get more dollars into our schools.
You know, one of the things that you'll be dealing with if you're elected governor, you've mentioned the idea that perhaps there are some tax preferences that should be eliminated. But as you're aware, it takes a two-thirds vote of the state legislature to do that. And the state Supreme Court is right now hearing a case that would make a majority mean majority, not a supermajority, a 66% majority. Do you think, would you like to see the Supreme Court change that rule?
Well, the Supremes are going to do what they're going to do regardless right. of what I like. But my view is that I do not support the two-thirds supermajority requirement. And it's basically because of principles of democracy. I'm a bit old-fashioned. I believe that all of our citizens should have one vote. And in fact, if you impose a supermajority requirement, that's not what happens. What happens is, if you do the math, one citizen has one vote, the other citizen has 1.5 votes. And I see no reason that any of our citizens should be treated either as lesser or greater citizens. We all ought to have one vote. So I'm not supportive of the two-thirds requirement. I am supportive of making sure that we review these corporate tax breaks on a regular basis, because frankly, what happens is, you know, in 1940, an industry might come in and said, you know, we're a new industry, give us a little break and we'll thrive. And, you know, 60, 70 years later, they still have on the books this break, even though they're a very mature industry. And I think that's the case with some of these breaks. We need to review them and take that money and put it into schools, because that's where it really belongs.
Now, of course, that's been approved by voters, the two-thirds supermajority. There's another issue that's going to be on the ballot, and it's going to be on the ballot again, and that is an initiative to legalize marijuana for adults, have the state government overseeing the growing and overseeing the sales of it. You oppose it. Will you defend it if voters pass it?
Yes, if voters pass it, and I frankly think it is going to pass, I'm going to make sure that the will of Washington voters is respected. I will do as I've done in the past on medical marijuana, try to fight to make sure the federal government respects voters' wills here, and we can move forward in that regard. And I will vigorously defend it, not try to overturn it. But this is not the only issue on the ballot.
No.
We got marriage equality on the ballot, and I hope people will respect what we've always done in this state, which is to move forward. And I think it is moving forward on marriage equality to respect everyone's right to love and marry who they wish in our state. So that's my position on that as well.
You're an attorney. Where do you think the federal government might attack a voter-passed initiative legalizing marijuana sales to adults? Where do you see that coming from? How do you anticipate you would be defending it if it passes, as you say you think it will?
Yeah, you know, I don't think that there is a reason we shouldn't be optimistic that if it does pass, that the administration will look at the states as we are, which are a bit of experiments in democracy, and take their foot off of us on that decision. As you know, I've been working to have them do that in the medical marijuana field, and we've made some progress on that. We are having medical marijuana to some degree distributed in our state without the federal government coming down there with the FBI. And I think that probably would happen if the voters pass this initiative. So we would want to move forward with the will of the voters, and I will defend that.
I'm a little surprised to hear you say that, because if President Obama is reelected, he's talked about not having federal officials going after medical marijuana dispensaries, and he has. On the other hand, if Mitt Romney is elected, it's hard to see him as president allowing there to be legalized sales of marijuana to people in Washington State.
I am supporting President Barack Obama, and he is supporting my candidacy, and that's an honor. I think here's what I believe. I believe we do need, whether this passes or not, to shift law enforcement resources away from the investigation and prosecution of individual private use of marijuana. We have much more serious crimes to pursue. We have limited criminal justice budgets. Whether it passes or not, I will work to move criminal law enforcement resources to more important places in our criminal justice system. That's the right thing to do, and I'll be working in that direction one way or another.
Jay Inslee, thank you so much for coming by. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, and I'm still working on your vote. I know you've got a ballot there in the kitchen table. I may give you a call tomorrow morning.
Jay Inslee, a Democratic candidate for the governor of Washington State. If you've got your ballot, take a look at it. Cast your vote. Do some research. There's a lot of information out there, including at Jay Inslee's website and Rob McKenna's website, to find out more. David Hyde produces our program with Arwen Nix. We get production help from Molly Williams. Andy Hurst is our engineer. From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds.